See this symbol here?
Yeah, the T? Timeout?
Timeout. Timeout. I'm calling
a timeout.
This is a live show.
No.
For this election campaign,
the clock is ticking.
I'm calling a timeout for all of the crazy rhetoric, the insults, the negative campaigning.
I can go with that.
Can you imagine a debate, a national debate this year over how our government would actually work? A nuanced debate which explores the delicate relationship between the states and the federal government?
I can imagine it.
You can imagine it, yeah. A spirited argument on street corners, okay, in the United States and among leaders in virtually every town and village over whether there needs to be a set of amendments to the Constitution. Call it a Bill of Rights or something.
Oh, that's catchy.
To explicitly limit the powers of the national government. Can you imagine such a debate?
I can imagine it.
Yeah, well, precious little of that this election season, and we want to imagine it. We're not even going to play you the honkers and gaffes from this year's campaign debates. They're too painful.
Right.
I've called it
timeout. I can reenact them.
let's not, but it's why we've invited historian Pauline Mayer to the program. For the past decade, she's been researching the history of how the U.S. Constitution was actually framed and ratified by the people of the United States. The book that came out of her research is called Ratification, The People Debate the Constitution, 1787-1788. Dr. Mayer joins us from Boston, where she teaches at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Pauline Mayer, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I am so thrilled to have you here because this book is such a great story of how broad, at least in terms of the research you were able to get your hands on, the debate over the Constitution was back in the 1700s.
And this election controversy that you're imagining actually happened. Only it was 200 years ago.
All right, so give me a sense of what were the big flashpoints. I mean, part of this book is about the federal government's even authority to collect taxes under any circumstances. How did that debate go?
Well, it went on in towns. It went on in the streets. It went on in parlors. People read the Constitution. They argued about what it meant. They looked at where the sore points were. They looked at parts where they said it was ambiguous. They knew it inside out. This is an amazing story. And they were what they were most sensitive, of course, was how well represented they were and who was going to tax them, because they had just fought with Britain over no taxation without representation.
Now, explain how the information got from the street corner, from the town criers, from the local pubs, all the way to the constitutional delegates who would actually vote and decide matters in the states at the time. It was the Confederation.
Well, correct. But the way the Constitution was ratified was by special elected conventions. So, the actual process changes from state to state. But in Massachusetts, for example, people in the town meetings debated the Constitution, decided who they were going to send to their state convention, and sometimes told him what they thought.
And I'm going to play you a cut from 2009. It's Senator Al Franken, who's actually discussing a point of constitutional law with someone from the Department of Justice about warrantless wiretaps. Just listen to this and tell me if it gives you a sense, it recalls a sense of the spirit of seriousness of the debates back in the 1700s.
My understanding is that the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution specifies that you must have probable cause.
Fourth Amendment actually protects all of us against unreasonable search and seizure.
But that's what it says. The measure is probable cause, I believe.
The amendment says unreasonable search and seizure.
Pauline Mayer, that's actually a debate between Michael Hayden, General Michael Hayden, who was trying to be ratified as the head of the nation's security apparatus, with a senator about what's in the Fourth Amendment. The great thing there is what?
Well, that they're both. The amendment says both things. it sounds like he did stopped after a couple of lines.
and this is, of course, the man who would probably be the most involved in enforcing the Fourth Amendment.
Absolutely. You know, the question is whether every American should read the Constitution, and I firmly believe we all should. I mean, it takes about a half an hour. We live long lives. Is this too much to ask?
Oh.
But that people who are responsible for it, who are going to be sitting in the government, are unaware of what the Constitution says is pretty shocking.
Let's talk a little bit about the voices that were represented at some of these conventions. Can you tell the story of Jonathan Smith a plain man, he called himself. He lived in Western Massachusetts. Right. He lived by the plow. He took the floor at the Massachusetts Constitutional Convention and made an extraordinarily eloquent case.
Yes. Yes. Well, he made a tremendous case for the Constitution,
right,
which was against, you know, much of his name, what many others from the interior parts of Massachusetts were arguing, talked about his experience during Shays Rebellion and the need for a government, that how much he felt the need for a firm government in the course of that rebellion, how vulnerable he felt, how he was attacked by different people or threatened, the need for a government, and then he saw the Constitution and thought this was his salvation. It was a beautiful speech.
And it's a total reversal from the sort of common man populist speech today of big government scares us, we hate big government. Here was a case where the chaos of the colonies in the late 1700s caused people like Smith to embrace this national government.
That certainly did happen. And what is also very striking is in the conventions, you had a lot of delegates from rural places who were not terribly educated people, who were not, as they said at the time, persons of practiced eloquence, who spoke in public a lot. And they sat and listened. And then at the end of the convention, they got up and said what they made of what they had heard. And they're beautiful speeches. I mean, these people were intelligent. They were thoughtful. They were discerning. There's a letter in the book by a man named Nathan Dane who talked about the Americans as an intelligent people who would make good decisions. Look, these people were a model for us.
Can I ask you one last question about your previous book called American Scripture? A lot of people in the Tea Party describe America's founding documents as sacred religious texts. Do you go along with that before we go?
Well, religious texts. I mean, we've put religious glosses on them. They aren't religious in the conventional sense. I mean, for the period in which I'm writing on the Constitution, it was anything but religious.
Right.
It was a punching bag.
Well, the passions were high. The book is Ratification. The People Debate the Constitution, 1787, 1788. It's a great time out from the rhetoric of this 2010 campaign. Pauline Mayer, thanks so much for being with us. Pauline Mayer is a professor at MIT.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.